This audio recording has been made available to you by LatterdayConservative.com.
To be here with you and to be able to talk a little bit about EMPs and some of the problems that we're facing right now. Most of you, I think, I've seen before, we've talked before at one time or another, maybe you've read my other books, and I think you know where I'm coming from. And I think I know where you're coming from because you're here. We seem to have a lot in common, a lot of camaraderie with many of you that we've talked to. And now, you know, let me show you something here. How many of you have read that book? Okay, many of you have. And let me just introduce the topic by saying I read the book also. I read it about, probably 2 months ago, 3 months ago, maybe a little longer. And again, many of you have read this already, 1 second after. And I read it, like I said, several months ago. And in reading it, I became a little disturbed. I didn't like it. And I don't know what your impression was when you read it. I've heard many people say, boy, that's the epitome of showing what things will be like in an EMP situation. But as I read it, I thought that might be what it's like somewhere else. But probably it's not what it will be like in an LDS community. That we'll have a much different perspective. We have some leadership that's built in. And so as I looked at that, and we have a study group, if you will. That's kind of a bad term to use, isn't it now? We have a group of people who get together on a fairly regular basis in Spring City, Utah. And we were talking about this. How many of you know Steve Jones? Okay, Steve's my neighbor down there. We have several others. We got together, we started talking about 1 second after. And all of us decided that there's some things there that we need to be aware of, but it wasn't really geared to our situation. And so we began looking at things with our situation, and that's why the book was written when the lights went out. And we got that to the printer very quickly, and I hope you enjoy it. It was made to enjoy. But mainly what that book is made for are those who don't know what an EMP is. Do you have neighbors that have never heard of the terminology before? And we have a number of people that are friends of ours, and we've talked to about EMPs, and they're just incredulous when they hear that things might really happen because of an EMP. And so this book was designed for those, frankly, who have very little knowledge about it and can begin the preparation. We're going to find here, as we begin looking at various statistics, that about 15% of the church, and that's optimistically, have food storage, which means that we're looking at 85% that don't. And in our wards and other wards that I've attended, that you've attended, probably there are many people who probably are not on the same page that you are in many of the things that we're going to talk about tonight. And so with that in mind, recognize the book is not for the person who's well-schooled, who knows all about it. This is for the person who probably is just learning. It's a primer. And it was written to get him involved as a novel and be short, be cheap, inexpensive. So all those things together would make it so he could read it and say, hey, am I really prepared for this sort of thing? But let's look at EMPs and what they are. Do most of you have a knowledge of EMP already? Electromagnetic pulse? Okay, many of you do. Some of the things I'm going to show you here will be old school to you. But as you look at it, we can talk about some of the various things here, and with them, maybe have some dialogue back and forth. If you have some things to add, don't feel embarrassed or hesitant, because you probably know a lot more than I do about it. I've been studying it now for about 4 months. And in that study, I've come across a lot of things. One of the main things that I've used, well, two things. I've used the Congressional Report on EMPs. How many of you are aware of that? Okay, we'll do a lot of quoting from that here because that congressional report came out in 2008. So we'll talk about that quite a bit and what they determined was important for the United States. And then I have a close friend. And anytime I get in trouble, I call him. And his name is Joel Skousen. Many of you know him. And so I call Joel. And in fact, Joel did an endorsement here on the back of the book. But I called him and I said, Joel, what do you think about doing a book on EMPs? And he said, that's really what we need right now. Why do we need it? Not that we're sure we're going to have an EMP. I think we will. But that's only a think. That's not a prophecy by any means. But as Tom explained earlier, if we're prepared for that, we're probably going to be prepared for anything. And so with that, let's go into some of the things here. Let's back up. Can all of you see that all right? Do we need to turn more lights off? Is that all right? Does it need to be higher? Okay, I'm going to assume that everybody can see it then the way it is. Okay. So EMP, the electromagnetic pulse, and then 1 second after, which was a book that was written on it on a, again, a novel basis. And many of you have read the novel already. When I read it and my wife read it, my wife was really turned off by it. And frankly, I was a little turned off by it. But there are some things there that were very good to know. And I think he thought things out fairly well in what would happen in a community where there is no organization, where simply out of the blue you have no electricity, no electronics, and here are some of the things that will happen as a result of that. And that's also what we tried to do. Now, the Congressional Record, the Congressional Research Service, July 21st, 2008, and a report to the Commission of the House Armed Services Committee. Those two came together in one document. And that document you can find online. If you just put those words in, you'll find it. And it is on hemp, which I don't know why they came up with that, but high altitude electromagnetic pulse, the threat assessments to the United States. And these were then given to Congress as well as to the armed services to determine how we can prepare for that as a nation. Now, what they were talking about was if it happened, if the electromagnetic pulse happened. And how does that happen? It is an instantaneous, intense energy field that can overload or disrupt at a distance numerous electrical systems and high technology microcircuits. That's, again, anytime you see a quote here, that's directly from that Congressional Record. And so they're talking about what it can do. And it says disrupt at a distance. What kind of a distance? It could be nationwide. We don't know. It can happen at different levels. And as you're aware, it happens from an altitude, high altitude. And so it's a single low-yield nuclear explosion high above the United States. It can produce a large-scale EMP effect that results in a widespread loss of electronics, but no direct fatalities. Isn't that interesting? You can take a nuclear weapon at a height, and we're talking about 300 miles. And actually, it can go very low. But what they've looked at are three different areas. They've looked at 30 miles, 150 miles, and 300 miles in altitude. And that will not produce death, but it will produce, again, the microcircuitry and the electronics and electric grid in the electric systems going out. And when that happens, of course, we say we don't know when it'll come back on. They could be... could be up to a year or a year and a half, according to the report here. Can you imagine being without electricity or electronics for a year and a half? And we'll get into some of the ramifications of that. So continuing, the ubiquitous dependency of society on the electrical power system, coupled with the EMP's particular damage mechanisms, creates the possibility of long-term catastrophic consequences. How do you define catastrophe? And that's really what we're getting at here. What happened? Can you see that okay here on that side? How do you define catastrophe? And we're saying that with a catastrophe, there will be widespread, you know, boy, you get into something, we'll talk about the ramifications here. But all the things associated with that, we're going to talk about transportation, we'll talk about communications, we'll talk about everything associated with power and the power grid. That power grid, from everyone I've talked to, is very fragile. Fragile in the sense that it could easily be disrupted and be very difficult to put back together again. It's something, again, the power grid, you think of all the towns and cities that we have here, starts as something small, and you add on, you add on, you add on, and your basis for that power grid is very weak. And so once it falls, you really can't rebuild it. You've got to start over again. And that's part of the problem when you have no electricity. And if you can imagine that now, not just in our county or in our state, but a nationwide phenomenon. Should significant parts of the electrical power infrastructure be lost for any substantial period of time, many people may ultimately die for lack of the basic elements necessary to sustain life in dense urban and suburban communities. What are we talking about? The various estimates in the United States are that between 50 and 90% of the population would die with a full-scale EMP. Can you imagine that? 50 to 90%. And most of them seem to center in right about the middle, or about 70%. I have a good friend who is in Mexico right now, and I'll explain why he's in Mexico. But he worked for the Marine Corps, and he was asked by the Marine Corps to determine or to write, and he took a year to write it, the threats assessed to the U.S. And he said as he was going through the various threats with the Marine Corps, they centered in on EMPs. This has been about 5 years ago, because they weren't sure what to do with EMPs. And so he wrote the entire manual virtually based on EMPs. And they determined at that rate in the Marine Corps that the death rate would probably be about 70 to 75%. That's pretty high. And then he went on to say that he now is in Mexico. He's working with the government in Mexico. And he said he was at a lunch the other day with various people who are senators and so forth in the Mexican government. And he said as they were sitting down at the table, he asked the question, what would happen if an EMP were to fall and cover all of Mexico? What kind of a death rate do you think they'd be looking at? And he's, you know what they said? And I think you can imagine, much less. Why do you think much less? Because exactly, the people are rural, they fend for themselves, they're not used to the indoor plumbing that you and I enjoy, they're not used to running down the supermarket and buying what they need. They don't depend on computers and telephone systems, and they determined they'd probably have about 25 to 30% die in Mexico, and they would be in Mexico City, Guadalajara, and the big cities. But when you get out in the countryside, then it becomes much more feasible and to get to take care of yourself. And that's what we tried to point out in this book, that if you're in a small community, again, a small LDS community in our situation, but if you're in that kind of an atmosphere, it's going to be much different than if you happen to be in downtown New York City. And I think you know that. And so they asked the question, kind of a rhetorical question in this report to Congress, are the long-term effects of a successful high-altitude leading to possible widespread starvation and population reduction potentially more devastating to the U.S. homeland than an attack by surface nuclear weapons? Isn't that an interesting question to ask? You're asking that to the Armed Services Committee in Congress. And that's the question. What is more valuable that we prepare for, a nuclear attack or literally an EMP attack? And it's quite a question to ask because they aren't sure what to do. And they admit this over and over again. How do we prepare a nation to not have access to electricity and electronics? It could possibly take years for the United States to recover fully from the resulting widespread damage to electronics and the power grid. The duration of disrepair lasts for years. Again, quoting from that record. This is what we're talking about with the height of the burst. And they're saying that literally if you can go over the center of the country, that at this, let's see, I'm trying to think, that's 100 kilometers, 300 kilometers, 500 kilometers. I'll let you go ahead and figure that out in miles. But you have The first one dropped would cover the majority of the United States. Then we go a little wider to finally the largest one at 300 miles high. That will cover about half of Mexico, the large part of Canada, and all of the United States. That's a lot of area. And that's what they're talking about as the biggest fear right now. Who has the ability to do that? We know that China has that ability right now. We know that Russia has that ability right now. Iran would like that ability, and they might soon get it. We don't know. North Korea would like to have that ability, and they're playing with these things also, not to that magnitude. Joel Skousen, in his last World Affairs brief, how many of you subscribe to that? Anybody here? A few of you. And you know that this morning when it came out, he talked about EMPs a little bit, and he said the only countries, again, with that capability right now, again, are China and Russia, but the other countries could do it if they were to come together. And we're looking at roughly six, I think they said 1 megaton nuclear weapons. Again, six of them poised from all along the coast, three on each side of the coast covering the United States would do the same thing. Joel doesn't think it can be done with one. Many other people, and we're going to talk about different individuals who think it can be done with one. One of the things I find in studying EMPs, nobody agrees. Why don't they agree? Because we don't know. You know, we have certain scientific articles about it, we have certain people saying certain things, and we can go back from some historical record on it, but as of 1963, we were no longer able to go into the air for to detonate nuclear weapons. And because of that, we had to put everything now in some kind of a, working with scale models and so forth to see how things would work. We didn't actually have the actual ability to see it happen, which we will be able to see if it ever does happen, but so far it really hasn't. So again, now we have the scientists coming together saying, this is what we think will happen. But again, the quotation there, a single device detonated at an appropriate altitude over Kansas, and some of you is Omaha, Nebraska, reportedly could affect all of the continental United States. Well, what are the effects of the EMP? And start thinking, if you will, where that takes us. Long-term disruption of the power grid. Have you ever found when the power goes out for a while, and I'm sure it's happened to all of you before, it goes out in Spring City frequently, and when it does, the lights go off, and I say, well, I guess I can't read. Let me turn the TV on. And that doesn't work either. So we'll go make a snack in the microwave. And that doesn't work. And over and over and over again, everything we do seems to be associated with electricity. Can you imagine what would happen when that power grid does go out, or if it goes out for any lengthened period of time? Fuel distribution. The gas pumps work with electricity, don't they? And also, there are trucks that bring those things in. If they don't run, then how do we get fuel? So fuel is an issue. And we're going to talk here about what happens to vehicles because they're electronic. Transportation systems. How long does it take the supermarket to turn over their food? They figure between 3 and 4 days for a turnover in most supermarkets, that quickly. And so if we're used to going down to the store for what we need, and we do that all the time, most of us do at least, if you can imagine 3 to 4 days the shelves are empty in normal usage, and obviously in an emergency situation they go much faster than that. Aircraft, believe it or not, they can't fly either. And the real concern is what happens if you're in the air when the EMP hits. And what they're saying is they'll probably be able to continue flying, but they won't be able to land.
Eventually they will.
Continue flying for a while. Food and water supplies. Water, unless you have some kind of a gravity feed system, is based on electric pumps, isn't it? In city situations, it virtually always is. And so water becomes a real issue. Food is a real issue. Our industrial capacity, of course, will go to nothing. Communications. Isn't it neat that we have, we can send emails, we can do text messaging, we can do all these neat things right now. But when the time comes when there is no way to communicate like that, what do you do? In our situation, our family, my son back there lives in Kansas, he's going to Florida. How do we communicate? And you think of that for all of our families and what happens now. We have many who are much closer than that. But even at that, you know, 100 miles, 50 miles, how do you communicate? How do you communicate for children in school? Satellites may degrade or cease, and equipment for hospitals, and that's one of the things that was pointed out so severely, I think, in One Second After, where you have continually the hospital, all the apparatus and everything necessary to sustain life, all of a sudden stops. Someone asked me the other day, what happens if you have a pacemaker? What happens if you have a pacemaker? It probably will not continue. A lot of things that are dependent on electricity that we don't think about. And as we said, several potential U.S. adversaries such as Russia and China now are capable of launching a crippling high-altitude electromagnetic pulse strike against the United States with a nuclear-tipped ballistic missile, the ICBMs. I don't know how many of you noticed, you wouldn't notice, but if you read about it, did you read about how many various missiles and such were lost in Libya? Anybody read that? 10,000 misplaced?
20,000.
Is it 20,000 now?
20,000.
Okay, I just read 10,000. That seemed like enough. Just misplaced. Country, and of course, those aren't the ICBMs here we're talking about. The interesting thing is most countries right now have access to ICBMs. Yes?
Yeah, I was thinking back at your list, and one of the things that you didn't mention that might be equally as important is the natural gas lines that heat your house.
Good point.
They don't work, so you don't have electric or gas to run to heat your house in the winter. I'd say that's an important.
Yeah, gas lines. And how many of you had the electricity go out for 3 or 4 days in the winter? Okay, you know we're talking about that. That happened to us last winter, and I'm glad you brought that up because we got cold about the second day. Yeah, gas is an issue. Well, one of the things that I found interesting, this is also from the congressional report, Russia has made extensive preparation to protect its infrastructure against hemp by hardening both civilian and military electronic equipment. Interesting, isn't it? They are working on that end just in case you, our country, determines to send EMP over Russia. And so they're making preparations for that. In our country, we've determined not to. We don't want to make people nervous. And by providing continuous training for personnel operating these protected systems. This I found a little disconcerting. From the same report, a smaller scale EMP weapon requires a relatively simple design and can be built using electrical materials and chemical explosives that are easy to obtain. Does that bother you? I hope it does. It is estimated that a limited range suitcase-sized EMP weapon could be constructed for much less than $2,000 and is within the capability of almost any nation and perhaps many terrorist organizations. We aren't talking about the 300-mile type now. We're talking about lower ones. But still, it could have that same effect to a lesser radius there. Now, if you don't mind, some of you have probably seen this already. I took this off YouTube, but I found a couple of good excerpts here talking about EMP and what they are and what they do.
Directed energy weapons like lasers and acoustic devices are effective because they focus all their energy onto a single spot.
5, 10 seconds. 9, 8, 7.
So just imagine how much more terrifying that would be if that energy could be spread across an entire continent.
1, 0.
America's nuclear test program produced the most fearsome weapons of mass destruction the world had ever seen. generating heat and blast on a scale never imagined before, mankind suddenly had the power to destroy entire cities. This terrifying spectacle was so overwhelming that one side effect of these tests was almost overlooked. The electromagnetic pulse.
When we first tested nuclear weapons before Hiroshima, we tested some in the Pacific, about maybe 1,000 miles from Hawaii. But the electromagnetic energy that generated carried all the way to Hawaii. It actually blew out electric street lights and red and green signal lights in Hawaii.
They had discovered EMP, an invisible pulse from a nuclear blast that completely and permanently destroys electronic equipment over massive distances. The military quickly realized how vulnerable it was and took steps to protect itself.
During the Cold War, we were very concerned about EMP because of the byproducts of a nuclear attack. And I mean a tactical nuclear attack on the battlefield. We went to great lengths to harden ourselves against EMP. Since the Cold War, that's not such a big criteria.
When the Cold War ended, the threat of nuclear attack disappeared and EMP ceased to be a concern. We surrounded ourselves with even more sophisticated technology, and gradually we became increasingly dependent on the systems we created. Transport, finance, electricity, communications, everything relies on a hidden network of millions of microchips, each one silently working for us. Like it or not, today there's no going back.
Think about it. You buy a cup of coffee. The guy who sells the coffee gets the grains from a supplier who has them delivered by truck from a warehouse. It's all connected. So what happens when suddenly, without warning, the connection is broken? And the machine just stops.
The lights are out in a huge and history-making blackout.
Our people are without water and
we must... What's going on?
In August 2003, when the power shut off along the east coast of America and Canada, unprecedented chaos broke out. Major cities like New York were brought to a standstill. Thousands were trapped in subway tunnels, while road traffic became instantly gridlocked. But things could have been much worse. Vehicles may have been at a standstill, but at least they worked. Mobile phones and police radios weren't affected. Once the power came back on, things quickly returned to normal. An EMP attack would make these events almost seem trivial. The technology already exists to build a weapon that could bring a country like the United States to its knees. A weapon so powerful, it could completely obliterate an entire infrastructure. To find out more, I have to make my way to one of the most isolated and remote locations in the United States. It's also where the story of EMP began.
Up ahead is the largest military installation in the United States, with over 3,000 square miles of testing ground. The base first came to prominence in 1945, with the explosion of the world's first atomic bomb.
Our need is pressing for a nearby test site. This is called Ground Zero.
Back then, the work concentrated on trying to perfect the ultimate nuclear weapon. Today, ironically, it's all about defending ourselves against it.
And as you might expect, there are some humdingers in the way of gadgets.
The equipment might have changed a little, but White Sands is still researching the effects of a nuclear blast. It may not look it, but in a way, this is the modern equivalent of an atomic bomb.
What is this device? What's this thing do? This is an EMP simulator. We use this facility here to simulate the effects of a high-altitude nuclear explosion.
It doesn't produce a mushroom cloud or nuclear fallout, but this device plays a vital role in preparing America's defense force against the unthinkable.
The military uses this testing facility for what?
Currently, we test all Army systems here. Our commanders need to know that in the event of a nuclear detonation on the battlefield, that they'll still be able to
they'll still be able to operate.
But the modern military relies heavily on ultra-high-tech systems. Is it really ready for an EMP attack?
EMP would be very dangerous to the U.S. Armed Forces.
General Wayne Downing was in charge of the U.S. Special Operations Command.
Because we are a highly technological force, we use sophisticated electronic gear. You know, you've got sensors, you've got communications devices, you've got computers. The battlefield is the ultimate system.
And if today's military hardware was suddenly wiped out, our only short-term line of defense would be to go back to basics.
Which means we'd have to dust off our Lensatic compasses on our maps. And that's why when we train today, you still got to train under conditions without your technology. EMP could cause us a lot of heartache.
After the break, I see for myself what EMP can do. And then I put myself directly in the firing line. I've come to White Sands Missile Range to see for myself what an EMP attack might actually do. This device creates the same electromagnetic pulse that's given off by a nuclear blast. The pulse doesn't affect people, only electronics. But just to be on the safe side, Russ and I retreat to a safe distance. This remote control helicopter is about to fly through an electric discharge of close to 1,000,000 volts. And yet the most sinister thing about it is there's no flash, no bang.
There you go. There you go. Excellent work. Excellent work.
In an instant, the helicopter circuitry is completely fried.
That's awesome. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. 1 second you're in the air, next second you're on the ground. Not a good way to go through the day, especially if you're in an airplane. Let's go take a look at it. Flying along just like that. He's doing a great job. Next thing you know, just one little click. Click. And boom. Right out of the sky.
For the ultimate test, I'm going to put myself right into the line of fire by driving a vehicle through the pulse. The fuel tank has been specially prepared using pressurized nitrogen to prevent an explosion. Even so, this isn't exactly standard procedure.
They've assured me that when the pulse radiates, that the car will not explode. So I'd like to say to my family, I love you. And to the camera guys and the cameras, they have to leave because they can't stay around for the shot. So let's see what happens.
Here we go. 5. Four.
Get a little momentum.
3, 2, 1.
I'm still alive. The car is officially dead. I heard the click of the switch. The pulse came through. Fried out the electronics as far as the starter switch. But there's still battery power. That's why the windows still work. They run basically very simply. You've got some lights on the dash, but when you try to go to the ignition, nothing really there. It just dies.
So an EM pulse from this facility can take out electronics from within a 50-foot radius. But what would be the extent of an actual E-bomb attack?
If a nuclear event is set off at the right distance above the ground, it can take out an entire area. So we're not talking about New Mexico. We're talking about the United States.
The kind of nuclear device that could do that sort of damage is designed to produce very little heat or blast. Instead, it creates a huge pulse of radio waves which sweep through long cables, frying delicate components forever.
What do you think would happen in the first 24 hours of an attack?
The word that comes to mind is chaos.
And Fred Levien ought to know. A retired naval commander, he is now one of the world's leading authorities on directed energy weapons. As an advisor to Congress, he has sworn to secrecy on much of this information. But even he doesn't know who might possess this kind of device.
Well, the Russians have been known to have built some directed energy weapons, microwave weapons, that are the size of a beer can. Yeah, and they're portable, and we don't know how many have been let loose. The Russians have had a terrible time keeping track of their nuclear weapons and directed energy weapons. So we're not sure whether some of them have been stolen or whether they've been sold. So it's very difficult to have an accurate picture of what's available.
What would you have to do to be able to build a system like that?
Have brains and money.
Really?
Yeah, it's as simple as that.
Brains and money are no object to the terrorist. And 9/11 showed just how far they're prepared to go.
How would a terrorist use any bomb or any impulse?
For example, he could do it on an airport and wipe out all the equipment that the airport used to keep planes in the air and guided. Then you've got these thousands of airplanes in the air, which are essentially flying blind. They don't know where they're located anymore. They don't know where to land. They might fly until they run out of fuel and crash. That would be probably one of the most immediate catastrophes. Or he could take it down to the New York Stock Exchange and detonate it there, and wipe out trillions of dollars in people's money by shutting down the New York Stock Exchange.
Traveling at the speed of light, an EMP attack would strike everything directly in its line of sight. The higher the altitude, the greater the devastation. At 30 miles above the United States, the device would affect up to half a dozen states. But at 300 miles, the whole continent of North America would be brought to an irreversible standstill.
That signal would cover most of the country and essentially shut down the United States as far as communications go.
How long would it take us to recover?
I could think it could be months, and in some cases perhaps years, for us to recover from that.
How do you protect yourself against something like that?
That's a good question, and it's probably the toughest one to answer, because although it might not be expensive to protect one system, you don't know which system a terrorist might hit. So it could run into extraordinary amounts of money to protect everything.
How severe is this threat? How actual is this threat?
Unfortunately, on a scale of 10, I'd give it an 8. But with people who have no regard, not only for us, but for human life, they'll do anything they can, and that's the big fear, I think.
Next, I uncover the lasers that the military want to keep a secret.
An energy like that is going to cause an awful lot of damage to a person.
Showing essentially things that would happen instantaneously. And I think that's the real issue there. You don't go home and prepare for it, do you? It just happens. And if you can imagine, again, in a city situation or high population density, what would happen in a case like that? We've been cautioned, and we're going to get into some areas here where we need to be prepared. And we know we need to be prepared. We've always been taught to be prepared. But it's hard to prepare for everything, isn't it? And not only is it hard for us individually to prepare for everything, it's hard, especially in an area, in a situation where there may be many who are unprepared. So how will an EMP change our lives? I don't know if you can see that or not. I just happened to run across this when I was looking for images of EMP, and I thought, boy, that's great. We'll be using wood stoves, making our own, actually making everything from scratch over a flame, over a fire. Spinning wheels, the whole thing there, it puts us back 100 years, doesn't it? Literally. And I suspect many of us would welcome that in a way. However, it's going to be very difficult, and it's going to be prolonged, that we know. So, electric or electronic dependency, communication, and transportation. Electricity and electronics. What's involved here? Let's have some participation here. What do you think when you think of electricity or electronics?
Computers.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, I spend a lot of time with the computer right now. Not by choice, but we need to. What else? And you kind of extend that. Computer becomes your email. Computer also, perhaps you shopped on the computer. You're used to receiving things by mail order and such. All those things that computer does. What else? Not just the computer, what else? Water, sewage, based on electricity and pumps. Yeah.
Refrigeration.
You know, I've talked to somebody the other day, and they were talking about their food supply, and most of it's frozen. May not work.
Well, I was just going to point out that in that demonstration with the car, the electricity was not disrupted. It was, the battery was still intact, the wires were still intact, it was the circuitry that is overloaded and fried.
Did everybody hear that?
The computer.
The computer in the car, the microcircuitry.
So your older cars that don't rely on circuitry would still work. There's a lot of things that would work that use electricity, because he showed the windows going up and down.
Yeah.
But you have to keep in mind, it's the electronic components that are being fried.
Did everybody hear that? And that's important to understand. It's the circuitry itself, the microcircuitry. When we talk about large wiring and such that goes to various places, that's probably not going to be affected at all. But we live in a day of microcircuitry, don't we? Your cell phones, the computers, everything else, again, that we have come to think of as our age will probably be lacking. We don't think about that. Frequently we say electricity, yeah, we can't turn the lights on. It goes so much deeper than that. You mentioned vehicles. And the vehicle here, the Taurus, Ford Taurus, stopped. There's some circuitry there, the electrocircuitry that, again, got fried. But you mentioned also the older vehicles. And if you read 1 second after, they talked about the older vehicles. What they've determined, really, is most vehicles prior to 1970 will continue running just fine. It's the post-1970 vehicles, 72, 73, where they got into a lot of that. That really is where the problem comes in. So my wife and I went out and bought a 1969 Jeep, and we love it. You know, what we're walking on is unexplored territory to a large extent. We know, again, from the things you've seen here, the things we've talked about, the congressional reporting, there's something very serious going on. To the extent, we don't know. Anyway, the electricity, electronics, then you get into communication, which we've talked about to some extent. Transportation will be an issue. Transportation issue. Why? Number one, you probably will not have the fuel for the vehicle. Number two, will you even have the vehicle? And it might stop, it might keep some going and some stopped. However, when we're talking about the entire population of the United States and better than 90% of that population going down to the supermarket for everything they need to buy, can you see the problems that's going to create? And so when they say chaos, they literally mean a chaotic situation. Transportation coming to a halt. Again, the empty shelves. Supermarkets generally turn their stock every 3 to 4 days, which we've already said. President Hinckley made this statement. There is a portent of stormy weather ahead to which we had better give heed. That's all I have to say about it. But I wish to say it with all the emphasis of which I am capable. What does portent mean? And there's a definition there. Something momentous or calamitous, prophetic or threatening significance. Now, I don't know if he's talking about EMP, but he's talking about something in the future. And something probably that will affect all of us. And back to the fact that we said, if we're prepared for this, we're probably prepared for virtually anything. I love President Benson's statement, a very similar statement. those who smugly think these calamities will not happen, that they somehow will be set aside because of the righteousness of the saints, are deceived and will rue the day they harbored such delusion. We have a wonderful woman in our ward. She's not here now, so I can talk behind her back. But, you know, she got up in fast and testimony meeting, the last meeting we had, and she made the statement, I'm so grateful that we have a living prophet to tell us what to do, because we won't need to do anything until he tells us to do it. And that's almost a verbatim quote. Have the brethren told us about certain things happening? Have they told us to do certain things? And we would be very ignorant if we said, no, we haven't been warned. We have been warned. Lynn?
Have you noticed they haven't said anything for the last couple of years in general conference?
Did you look at President Hinckley's statement? Back to that. That's all I have to say about it. The warning has been issued. It's been issued many times. It becomes redundant after a while. Boyd K. Packer in 2005, if 9/11 was a wake-up call, then the earthquake and tsunami in Southeast Asia was a kick out of bed. We need to pay attention to the signs of the times. Most of us are familiar with the signs of the times. We don't know everything that's going to happen, but we do know something momentous and prophetic threatening is going to happen to us. I go back to the book of Isaiah. Have most of you read Isaiah lately? Look at it when we talk about what's going to happen to us right now. In that statement over and over again in Isaiah, in an hour, he talks about destruction coming within an hour. I don't know how that's going to happen, but I know this would fit that bill. Yes.
Yes, with President Hinckley talking about stormy weather ahead, I think of NASA and its reference to space weather and the things they've talked about as far as having a Carrington event.
Yeah.
Do you have any observations on
that? I'm going to stay away from that one intentionally.
Okay.
And I'll talk to you afterwards.
Okay.
Anyway, all of the various things that you're aware of. And then President Eyring, very similar statement here, where he goes back to 2005. You remember the tsunami? It's funny how quickly we forget things like that. But you remember the tsunami and the huge mass of life that it took? And that was a real concern for us in the church because we sent aid as well as worldwide. The giant earthquake and tsunamis it sent crushing into the coasts around the Indian Ocean are just the beginning and part of what is to come, terrible as it was. And all things shall be in commotion, and surely men's hearts shall fail them, for the fear shall come upon all people. From the scriptures, you can go through section 29 of the Doctrine and Covenants, go through section 1 of the Doctrine and Covenants, through section 88 of the Doctrine and Covenants, over and over and over again, we have these warnings given to us. Who are the warnings given to? Us. When we really get into hard times, when food is scarce, or there is none at all, and so with clothing and shelter, money may be no good, for there may be nothing to buy, and you cannot eat money, you cannot get enough together to keep warm, and you cannot wear it, by President J. Reuben Clark. I was just out at his home in Grantsville just 2 days ago, and every time I go by there, I'm reminded of what he said. He used to say he went to Grantsville because he wanted to be away from the city. He wanted to be away from Salt Lake because he recognized cities were dangerous. And so he went out to the country. That's before they started pushing Dugway and Deseret Chemical. I think he'd probably move from there now. Statistics show that no matter what the church does, no higher than 15% have food storage. We're not going to say anymore, but our people need to be prepared. Back to not going to say anymore. You've said it enough already. Well, I don't have all the answers, but I know that you know there's something going on, and the EMP is one of the areas, I think, that is going on. Roger K. Young, most of you are familiar with him. Roger K. Young has built a scenario, and he talks about various things happening prelude to the latter days, prelude to the second coming of the Savior. And he's built the EMP into that now. And so if you look at his timeline, he does show an EMP there also. Most people are saying an EMP will probably happen. The technology is too easy, too many countries have it, and what an easy way to do things, and especially now that we have the Bush Doctrine. What was the Bush Doctrine? Preemptive strikes. And this would take no life. It would be very easy to do, very hard to pinpoint who actually did it. It's such an easy weapon to use. And that's why most people seem to feel it probably will happen. So with that, I'll wrap up. Yes?
How would a foreign country avoid that, certainly, you know, 100 miles over our airspace without detection or without us intercepting?
Good point. And we can go back to the map. Just visualize the map of the United States. And what we're talking about is launching ICBMs from outside the coastal area in international waters. That would be sufficient.
Oh, I was thinking central United States.
It goes off over the United States. See, that's what we're saying. The countries that have the ability to do that right now are China and Russia. They could send the intercontinental ballistic missiles from the coastal areas outside the U.S. to have them implode or explode over the United States. Yeah, these things are happening so quickly. I'm glad you mentioned that, 72 hours here. Every time, I told you I was making a study of this for 4 months, and in so doing, virtually every day when I Google things in there and get in there to look at it, things were different, more things were added. We are going at such a rate right now and edging just toward this, yes.
Well, I was just going to comment also that, you know, that's one scenario of a grand explosion, and that takes pretty sophisticated means, but if you consider a smaller device strategically placed, like at the New York Stock Exchange,
like I said,
and
here,
some other strategic places that terrorists could probably do, the disruption would probably be almost as equal.
Yeah, and there could be several small, one large. All we're saying is it's a real thing, and we need to. So for so long, we've talked about atomic and nuclear weaponry, and we talk about that with shooting us directly. Now we aren't saying that. Now we're saying the higher you are, the broader you can go with that. Let me just mention, I brought some things with me. We have this book, When the Lights Went Out, and I told you why that was written. It was written literally for people who have no idea what EMP is, or just, if you know what an EMP is, just look at the scenario, what could happen. And what we try to do is take that as far as we could. What's it like to be without electricity for a year? You know, what do you do? How do you keep warm? What do you do, period, just to keep things going? And how do you protect yourself when others are hungry and maybe you have all you need? Maybe you don't have all you need, but you have enough for yourself and maybe not for your neighbors. What do you do? And so that's what this gets into. We intentionally made that book very inexpensive. And then if some of you are aware of Awakening to Our Awful Situation, we're trying to get those also in as many hands as we can. And then some of you have asked about Revealed Educational Principles, a book I wrote about, oh, 7 or 8 years ago. And it just gets into, it's called Revealed Educational Principles and the Public Schools. This is my doctoral dissertation. And we went ahead and just put that into a format that becomes readable for people, showing that perhaps the public schools aren't the panacea they're supposed to be. So, Tom, back to you.
Let's give Dr. Lynette a talk.
This audio recording has been made available to you by LatterdayConservative.com. Learn what the Latter-day Prophets have said about the principles of liberty, the U.S. Constitution, secret combinations, and the proper role of government at LatterdayConservative.com.